This episode of Yes But Why Podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
When I was in kindergarten, the teacher used to say that I should be a clown. And from that point on, I hated clowns and I never wanted to be a clown. So I didn't want to be a performer just because of what she said. But then eventually theater came to my life and I wanted to be an actor. And of course, my parents said, no, if you want to be an actor, you have to have a master's degree in other thing. And then maybe you can have a theater as an hobby. That's what used to happen here in Portugal.
That happens to a lot of people that I know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I went to have a degree in industrial design, where I did four out of 5 years. At the fourth year, I just gave up and went to Sweden to work in a theater school, to work as a designer. As a graphic designer, and eventually there I learned about improv. And then when I came back to Portugal, I started to do the acting degree. But then in the second semester, I just quit because I don't like to take degrees, as I understood, as I found out, and. Yeah, from that point, I still do improv. And, of course, I did some workshops, some theater workshops, and some improv workshops as well.
So let's jump back. You just covered like 10 years or 20 years even in your life there super quickly. You listen to your parents, which is such a nice thing for you to do. I hope they appreciate that you did. What they told you to do, because so many other parents don't have kids that do that. But you went to school and you almost got a degree in industrial design. What's industrial design? Like cities? Like parks?
No. It's everything buildings? that is built by industry. Which is not artisanal. It's not made by hand. When it's not made by hand, it's made by a machine.
Oh, okay. Everything that's made by a machine?
Mostly everything. Like a chair.
classes were about the designing of everything that was made by machines.
Yeah, mostly it's like that. It's everything that's produced in mass production.
Like cars?
Like cars, yeah.
Huh.
Cars, chairs, everything that can be mass produced.
Like
that's jeans? Industrial design.
Yeah. Interesting. That seems like a huge amount of things to say. I'm just like imagining like how do you even break that up into a degree? I guess that's why it's a 5-year program. It's like that's so many things.
In Portugal it used to be all 5 years. But then it actually was the year that it changed, that it became 3 years and not 5. It was because of that change that my mind just broke down and I needed to go to Sweden.
Well, I mean, I think realistically what happened was that you didn't want to be an industrial designer and you were doing your best to be nice to your parents, but it was over.
Well, I do remember telling my father that my father was an architect. And I remember telling my father that, oh, well, I'm going to take this industrial design. And when I finish, I can do a master in architecture. And he said, well, okay. So I was totally lying to him because I knew that I didn't want to be an architect. Yeah. But, well, let's see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So maybe my father isn't that proud on me.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I went to college intending to get a biology degree, and that did not work out. So, you know, we all kind of have an idea of what – I feel like that's such a big thing, especially with everybody that I talk to that, like, you know – has a hard time making the decision, like either their family is not so excited about theater or they themselves are aware of the financial potential issues. So they're like,
yeah.
Oh no, I need to have a backup career. That's what I hear from a lot of people. So I did this as a backup. I have no backup.
Yeah.
This is all I know how to do. So that's why I keep trying to figure it out. But it's probably good that you have a backup of some kind. You have all these other, this other knowledge that can help you in the world.
For me, industrial design was really helpful, especially in theater, because of that, I do a lot of theater sets.
Mm-hmm.
Is it correct? Yeah.
Yeah. That's
so
right.
I do a lot of theater sets because it's what I used to do in college to, you know, in the prototypes, they had to be real. So once I did a guillotine for a theater set and I didn't have the knowledge, I just had my know-how and it helped me with that.
Yeah.
So it was, in a way, it was really good. And the working methods, how to work, and it really helped me in the theater because of my... the few years I have of industrial design.
Yeah, that's super great. Plus, what an asset you are to any theater that you are a part of, because now it's not just like, okay, we'll do a show with no set. It can be like, yeah. I'll make something cool, and then your particular show is, you know, better than the other shows going on because it's like, ooh, look at this amazing visual element that we don't usually get. I find that a lot with improv, you know, it's just a basic black box. And then, you know, they're, of course, creating what we're watching right in front of us. But at the same time, like, it is nice when you have, like, a little bit of something in the background, even if it's just colorful or, you know, a few of the theaters here have their logos on the back, which I think is super smart. But, you know, stuff like that, like, that's really great. Do you enjoy doing the sets and everything? Have you done that in lots of productions?
Well, not in lots, but in some. Actually, I'm fighting nowadays. We are fighting about how to do sets and how to have a lot of visual effects on stage without diminishing the improv itself. Mm. You know, I think that's the challenge. How to do the sets that won't fade out the improv itself.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. It can overpower it, or it can force ideas. Like if there's a specific thing, every scene's going to be about it because they're staring at it, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
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 And I see that.
And it's obvious. And it's obvious.
Mm. It's almost
like...
It's almost like the argument between certain, like, curating suggestions and just letting suggestions be. I've even, I even learned my original, when I first learned improv, I learned improv without suggestions. So there's so many different schools of thought, you know, and I can totally understand you having to have these discussions with people where you're like, no, I can help you and make it more exciting to look at. And they're like, no, but the purity, it's going to be bare bones. That's the key to improv. It's just on the inside of our hearts. Yeah, I totally get that. So what happened in Sweden? You moved to Sweden. You were like, school, I'm done. You go to Sweden. What happens in Sweden? Is Sweden a big theater place? What theater school did you work at?
I work in it's called a Folkhögskola, which is it's like before you went to college and you finish high school, you can go to this school to prepare you to life itself. And one of the courses they have is theater. Also, they have like dyslexia courses and Aspergy. No, it's not. You know, it's like. I don't remember. So they try to give tools to people to go to college and to be better at college. I was there in the. I was working with the teachers of the theater course, and I was doing the as I said the design, the web design and the graphic design. Eventually, I started to the deal was I was there. I had some pocket money because it was an EVS in European Volunteer Service. I had pocket money, and in exchange, they would give me pocket money. And some lessons, so I could take some theater lessons from that school. And the first thing that I learned about improv was theater sport, which was a big thing in that school. And they would do internal shows and also against other schools, like that school.
Wow! Something like that. Couple details I'd love to ask about. First was, I love that there is a school that you can go to after high school to help prepare you for life. I sure wish they had those here. Certainly yeah. In an interim, either you're not ready to go to college yet, or hey, you want to go get a job. By the way, here are some life skills. Like, that's super great. Especially, I enjoy the idea that acting is involved in that as well, because a lot of acting schools, like, you know, you go to college, but some of them are just conservatories. Like, it doesn't actually matter if you have you've graduated, you know, high school or something like that. It's just about having some sort of skill. So it's great that this, you know, preparatory school was like helping people get work on their acting skills so that if they tried to go to like a conservatory, they have something to show. Because I'm sure lots of people, you know, lots of parents are like, no, you can't do theater in high school. That's unnecessary use of your time. And so it's nice that they have this little thing where it's like, hey, but if you do like it. Plus, theater sports is fun. And you started out doing Swedish theater sports. That's super great. And you performed with them. Were you like performing and in their troupe and doing shows with them, or just taking classes?
Now, I was performing. First I started to watch. That was the first thing. Sure. And then after watch, I did the technician. And then after the technician, I did perform, because I had a big barrier, which was the language.
Oh yeah.
That was the barrier. So first I had to try to understand what they were saying, and then after that, I could perform that. So that's why after watching, I went to do the technician, because I could more or less understand what you're saying. And then I started to perform with them without speaking.
Oh.
And still not understanding what they were saying. So it was very good for me, because it made me a very physical improviser. So I'm very physical, mostly because of this experience.
Do you use a lot of emotion as well? You know, like outward physicalizations of emotion, so that your character can make choices that people, you know, connect with, even without language?
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
Do you use a lot of emotions with your characters? Like, do you find that when you're doing your characters that don't talk, are the happiness is huge happiness, or the sadness is big sadness? Do you find that the emotional part is what you're using, or is it physical, like you're running around the stage, climbing on things? How are you expressing yourself without words?
No, I think it's, I use physicality, but it doesn't mean that it's clown, in the way that it's not overreaction.
Okay.
It is just being there. When it's like, when I say that I'm very physical, it's I speak better with my body than with my words.
Yeah.
I think that's the sum of it.
Yeah. Now, do you think that you're not interested in going big emotions because of that kindergarten teacher ruining the idea of clowning for you?
No. No, because I was a clown before, and I already did a clown show, so I'm okay with that.
Okay, you've gotten through that. That's good.
The thing is... if I need to go into big emotions, I go to big emotions. But if I don't need to go, I don't need to go. The thing is, I think there is like three types of improvisers, or in my experience, I think there is three types. And one type is the talky one, who just talks. It just rationalize everything, and it just speaks through everything. Then you have the middle one, which is talky but also physical, and then you have the physical, who doesn't give many voice suggestions or ideas, but it does it everything with the body. Did you understand?
Yeah, totally. And I like the breaking it down. Do you teach workshops with relation to physical improv, since this is your expertise?
No, I don't teach any workshop. What I'm doing now, because I don't have. First I don't have the time to organize myself into doing a workshop.
Totally.
And first of all, because I fear that people won't come to my workshop.
Oh.
But what I do have is in one of my groups, because I didn't tell you, but I'm in two groups now. Three. I'm in three groups now. And in one of the groups, which is called Improv FX, we are doing open rehearsals. So we open the rehearsal to everybody. So if anyone wants to join, they can join. And in a way, it's a workshop because we have people with different levels of experience or none at all. So I'm giving workshops. It's not a workshop, but it's an open rehearsal. And answering your question, since the group is me and two other guys, so I work on what I want to work with my guys, and people are there and they learn that as well as a consequence.
Yeah, just when you described there are three different kinds of performers, I was like, oh yeah, your brain works like a teacher. You have or at least you've been in improv long enough that now you're like pulling it apart and pushing it back together and finding new ways to communicate about it. I find that when I talk to people who are improv teachers, not just improvisers, but improv teachers, they are, you know, their brain is always mulling over like, I wonder if this would work. Yeah. Let's try that. You know, people who perform tend to like pick away and then like, that's it. It's their own way to do it. But when you're, you know, when your brain works such that every single time you perform, you're like, I bet if I switched it, or like you start noticing the people around you and you're like, oh, she does it like this. That's different than what I do. I should pay attention and learn from that. Like the openness of that. And don't get me wrong, every improviser should be that open to see the way everybody's performing around them.
Yeah.
But Just the way that you phrased it made me think, oh, he's teaching this, because it just sounded like I was going to be like, don't give away what you're doing in your workshops. I want people to pay you money. But I'm excited to hear about these three different things and like how to access that. But that's super cool. I like the way you're thinking. Oh, also you said three groups now. Tell me the other groups. We got Improv FX. And what are the other two groups? I don't want to leave anybody out.
One is For Misfits, which is an English-speaking group. And also there is Saint-Rede, which means without net. And it's a group based in Sintra, which is not Lisbon, where I'm from Lisbon, by the way.
Oh, yes, you're in Lisbon right now.
Yep.
And the third group that you're performing with, what is it like in just a town outside of Lisbon?
Yeah. It is.
Like a smaller town situation?
Sorry?
A small town versus a big city?
Actually, in this small town is where the international festival happens. We have an international festival happening here in Portugal, not organized by me. and actually, it's in that small town. So,
the International Improv Festival?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. What's it called?
Spontaneo. Yeah, it's called Spontaneo. It's organized by Instantaneous.
That's great.
Which is so it's like there are two groups in Sintra. I think one of them organized the festival, which is not my group. And, then there are some like 5-6 groups in Lisbon.
Huh.
So the scene here in Portugal, the improv scene here, is not that big.
Yeah, that was my next question. I was going to say you came, so you like did theater sports in Sweden. You're having a good time, but you're doing it without words. So, you know, you kind of want to get home and maybe throw some words in there. What happened? Yeah. Like, was it like your volunteer service was over, and so they were like, adios, head on back to Portugal? Or was it like you got really excited about doing improv in Sweden and were like, I'm going to go home and see if I can do this at home?
Yeah, that was exactly what happened.
Cool.
And when I arrived to Portugal, well, before I arrived to Portugal, I went to Birmingham to a project there. And it was creative people meeting together, and someone from Italy. They told me, "Well, but there is already a improv group in Portugal," and I was like, "What?" So turns out that I think at that time, so in 2008, I think the group was already like 10 years, but I never heard of them.
I just said wow that you had been around them, and they were like, oh, I had no idea that they were there.
Yeah. And so, but I said, okay, let's see what happens when I return to Portugal. Let's see what happens. So when I returned to Portugal, a new group was just starting. And I tried to connect with them. I took a workshop with them. But then I did another workshop with some guys, and then with these guys I started doing improv in that group.
Nice.
But yeah, it was like that. So it took me like 2 years after returning from Sweden to start doing improv in Portugal.
Oh. And at that point there's only two groups doing it, and you're in one of the two? That's pretty cool.
No, I'm the third group. I was in the third group.
Oh. Wow, there really are only three. So, like, is there a school that's teaching it, or is it all just individual groups figuring it out or reading books or doing workshops on their own?
There is a group called Improvavish. So this was the second group to appear. They have a school for some years now, and they're doing every year, I think they do a workshop or a 3-month course where they teach a lot of people. And from that school, I think at least one group is solidified, it exists. Which is called Cardume. So from that school, this group started, and I think sometimes they have like old students joining together and performing. But yeah, mostly is what used to happen is. Each group, they invite teachers from outside and to teach them. Sometimes they, or some groups, they share the teachers. Some groups, they don't.
Yeah. Are people friends? Yeah. Well, because like there's 6 improv theaters in Austin, and sometimes they're friends and sometimes they're not. Like now they're all friends, but years back, the theater that I worked at, our leader was a kind of a jerk, and so people didn't love him. But does the improv community, to all 3 of the major groups, get along, or are they in competition?
Well,
it's okay if you don't want to say it. I don't know how many people in Portugal are going to hear this.
What did you say?
I said, don't worry. I don't know how many people in Portugal are going to listen to this. But then again, yeah. I'd love it if a lot of people in Portugal listen to this. Yeah, so maybe we shouldn't talk about it.
No, I don't.
Yeah. Okay.
It's okay.
Yeah, okay.
I don't worry about that. So, my theory.
Yeah, tell me your theory.
My theory. We have, well, it's not theory. That's my fantasy. I think that's my fantasy. So there are 3 universes in Portugal. One universe is one group. They are the famous one. They are the commercial one. If you talk about, if you talk to Muggles about improv, they will talk about that group. Muggles as mean people who don't do improv. Yeah. Okay.
What a wonderful international phrase to use.
Okay.
Thank you, J.K.
Rowling. So, if you talk about this group, if you talk about improv, everybody will say that group, or the Brazilians, Barbixas, which are a famous internet YouTube group. I don't know if you know them. Hmm. Okay. You should
check them.
You should check them. So these are our universe. So they are the old ones, the first ones to start doing improv. Yeah. And then there are another universe which meets 3 groups. So they don't mingle, those 2 universes. They don't talk with each other.
I see.
Especially because the first universe will talk... don't like the second universe.
Sure.
Understand?
Okay. Yeah.
So,
makes sense.
These 3 groups, they work together sometimes. Well, not sometimes. They invite. One of them organizes an improv international festival, and the others they go along with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I think they interact because it's interest, because they're for their interest to be together.
You know, it's interesting. It's almost like what we were talking about earlier with reference to the fact that like some people think that when you're an actor, you're just going to be famous. Like that's your effort. Like you're like, I want to be a famous actor, but wanting to be an actor can be so many things, and that if you're happy making plays in a small theater, or if you're happy working on community projects or something like that, you know, but still in the industry, people are always like, oh, well, if you're famous, what you're doing is more important. And I'm like, I don't think that's true. I think that every bit of art that's being made, every bit of theater that's going out in front of an audience is worth it. And, you know, I've done improv shows for 3 people, and I'm like, you guys are going to have a wonderful evening. let's enjoy it together. Like, I don't care whether it's three people in the audience or it's 5,000, like, or a million, you know, though I can't imagine a million person audience for improv would be great. But at the same time, like, there has to be, you know, everything has to be worth it. I think everything is worth it. No matter what you're yeah. doing, I think that it is good and great. But I totally understand that if you, like, you know, think you're fancy and you think you're the top dog, that it's easier for you to, you know, act like that. There's a theater here in the U.S. that's like that, that is like the number one name brand theater, that when people are like, oh, I do improv, they're like, oh, like UCB? And you're like, yeah. Yeah, but not UCB, but I don't do UCB. And even the people that are in the city where that is, in the cities where that is, you know, I find that that's just all famous people. It's like, good luck getting on stage there, because the famous yeah. people that graduated want to keep coming back because improv is fun and more fun yeah. than their acting careers in Hollywood. And so they're coming back and taking the stage time from, you know, Judy Smith, who just finished classes. She paid her dues, but, you know, famous person number one's here. So sorry, you're out, Judy. So, yeah, that happens a lot. I mean, I just wonder, because I've interviewed people in, you know, who, like, I'm lucky. In Austin, there is so much. There's so much to do. There's so many festivals. There's so many theaters. I will never tire of, you know, the opportunities that I have around me. But I've talked to people who are in cities where it's like, yeah, nobody does improv. It's just me and my friend. And we read Truth in Comedy and then we started doing it. And I'm like, what? That's amazing. Like, how do you even, if I didn't have all these people kind of pushing me along, like sometimes I feel like I'm just in a massive crowd, and that, like, even though I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can do it, the crowd pushes me forward and I'm like, oh, I guess we're doing more improv. Like, you know, it's just, I can't imagine. How do you keep it going in a smaller community? Like, you guys are doing all the work. You're not getting, people aren't handing you stage time. You're creating the shows. How do you keep that going? How does everyone stay positive and focused?
Well, first, I think people, we have a second job, which is the
Definitely,
first job which
yeah.
gives us money.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. And second, in my opinion, well, my perspective, I think it doesn't make any sense to do anything else. So I think improv for me is sharing, actually, it's just sharing, because I think the quantity of stories of the fantasy that I have in my mind, the world that I can create in my own mind, if I don't share with them, with the audience or with my colleagues, they will get lost. So for me, it's the only thing that makes sense is to share this what goes in my mind. So even if it's hard to do it, if we don't have the space or if we have to cancel the show because there is not enough people to watch the show, yeah, that's why I keep doing it, because it makes sense doing it.
Yeah, and it feels great to share those stories, to get those stories out there. It's an amazing way to be creative. And also, so you also do painting. So you have so many stories that they're coming out of you in different mediums. Are you painting and, like, selling paintings, or do you use your paintings just for yourself or in your sets?
Actually, I'm painting this one. The one I just painted, I'm just painting as a gift. But I don't, usually I don't paint because I don't have the time, because as I said, I'm in three groups. I'm also working on my solo right now. So I don't have much time. Today I'm sick, but usually I get out of work at 4 p.m. So at 4 p.m. when I arrive from work, I take a shower, I take a nap, I wake up and I go to the rehearsal. So this is my daily basis, more or less. So I don't have much time to anything else. But I wanted to paint minifigures. I want to paint, but I don't have the time for doing that.
I'm so glad that you have taken, like, that you took the time that your hands would be just doing nothing while you're on the phone with me to do the painting, though. I really, it's like, I hold creativity as the most important thing. I love it. And so the idea that while we're talking, you're also painting, it's like so beautiful and wonderful. Like, I'm like so happy that this is happening all at the same time. I'm like, yes.
I was worried that I couldn't have my English is decreasing. I was worried that my concentration was getting lost because I was painting, but I think it worked. Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, I don't think so. You stay pretty on top of it. I don't think I've been like, oh God, what am I talking about? Does he know what I'm talking about? No, you're great. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I'm just so excited. The idea that like, I used to paint and, I haven't done it in a while. But I just, when you said that you were doing it, I was like, oh God, that's so wonderful. Like, I'm just so happy. I just imagine you in like a room with a big easel, just painting on it while you're on the phone with me.
Okay. Yes, it is exactly like that.
Yeah. Don't ruin the fantasy. Don't tell me you're in an apartment. No. And like,
it's exactly like
you
that.
Know, you're just painting on a notebook. It's fine. Don't tell me. You're so funny. Awesome. You just said that you're working on a solo show. What's up with that? Tell me about that.
Well, this year I'm going to be 35 years old, and it's going to be like 20 years of my career as an actor. So I wanted to have a birthday party, which was a solo show where I can perform. So it's very it's in the early stages, but probably when this podcast will be online, I already performed it, so it's okay. I can do the spoilers now.
I won't. Nobody will know. If you're doing it in June or July, then don't worry. It won't be any spoilers.
It's July, so it's going to be our second July, probably.
All right, I'll
Let's
make
hope.
A note to put you out in August.
Okay. So it's called The Bearded Clown, which is the story of a clown who is tired of being a clown. So it's going to be a show about his personal life and why is he tired of being a clown and why he doesn't want to be a clown anymore.
You know what's really interesting about that? Strap in, audience. I have a theory about life, and I'm going to tell it to you. Now, if you've listened to multiple episodes of this podcast, you've heard it because I talk about it all the time. But I have this theory that we go through life in 18-year cycles. So, like, when you're born through to being 18, you're with your parents. You're living the life as a child. You're learning. You're going to school. You're under the care of somebody else. And when you turn 18, you know, they generally let you be an adult at that point. Even if you're still living with them or you're going to school and all that, you still have some autonomy. People let you make decisions. You're figuring out who you are as a person. So the next 18 years, 18 to 36, is your becoming who you are on your own. You first start becoming who you are under the tutelage of your parents, and then you become who you are on your own. And after that, you then have to live many more years, two, maybe three if you're lucky, cycles of 18 after that. Now, I think each 18 years, you kind of become a new person, like new exciting adventures happen. You look at the world differently, everything. You know, when you're 18, you're a different guy than you are right now.
Yeah.
You're the way you looked at the world, the things that you wanted from the world, the fears that you had. And next year, so I love that you are doing this solo show to celebrate the period of time that you have spent from 15 to 35 doing theater. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. I'm so excited about it. And I think that when you get a little bit older in the next couple of years, when you become new you next year, the year after, and you're like, oh, I need to do some new project. Who am I? I'm a different person. My creative things are a little bit different. How is it going to work? Yeah. You're going to be so happy that you had this show, that you were able to like digest and put it together. Like, what a smart thing. We should all do this. I'm going to start telling everyone to do this. When you're 35, like, come together and think about what your life has been like, because it's important to reflect on what you've done, appreciate it, and then move forward with the knowledge that you have. Like, I'm sure that it was tough when you were at the college for industrial design and you were like, this is not what I want to do. I'm doing this for someone else. I don't want to do it, but I guess this is just what I have to do. But I love the fact that even though it was might have been tough at the time, that now you take the knowledge that you learned. You're like, well, I did learn stuff, so I will take what I learned and I will use it to help what you really do love. So, I mean, like, that's just so awesome. And I'm just, it's like, this show sounds to be, like, it's going to be amazing. Believe me, when this episode comes out and we're already going like, guys, everyone's talking about it. It was the best show ever. Everyone was so excited. It'll just be I think everyone should do that. And I think that it is such an awesome thing that you're doing.
Yes. I hope that I can find a place to do it, because that's the hardest part. I want to mention that I'm being directed by a friend. It's called Stephen Thornton. He's an American improviser. And he's living here in Portugal. And he is giving workshops. Yeah. So if I can, I'm promoting him.
That's awesome. I love that you have a director to work with you. I recently directed a one-woman show as well. A friend of mine did a bunch of different characters and was developing a show like that, and I helped direct it. I felt so honored to be allowed to be part of this process with her, because it was it was her thing, and I really just wanted to make sure she got out of it what she wanted. And I'm sure Stephen wants that for you. It's so great that improv allows us the opportunities to find people to collaborate with, people who we can feel comfortable with and who will help us get our creative vision out there. I'm so glad that you have him. That's super awesome.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
You know, just throwing this out there, I don't know that it would really make sense, but the place where you're going to have that workshop with the glamping and everything like that, maybe you could do the show there. It's like a weekend. Glamp, watch some theater.
Yeah. Yeah, could be. But it's a Tuesday, and I have to go to work. So I can't make it.
I can't make it. All right, well, you know, I'm trying. You just, I remember when we talked before, you said you were starting a bar. Is that a thing? You're starting a bar?
No. I did the interior design of a bar.
Oh, whoa, really?
Yeah, because I work at IKEA as a visual merchandiser, so more or less an interior designer. So a friend of mine is opening a bar, actually is an improv actor, is an improviser. He asked on Facebook, does anyone know an interior designer? And I said, well, I can do that. So I did.
That's so cool. So now there's a bar in Lisbon that was decorated, that was like designed by you. That's so awesome.
Yep. And he's from an improviser. So probably going to have improv gigs and music gigs. And so definitely it should be a place to stop when you come to Portugal.
What's the name of the bar?
74, which means 74.
That's fun. Is there a reason why it's called 74?
Because it's the year of our revolution.
Oh.
When we have a revolution, we had a revolution. So it's a 60s bar, no, 70s, 70s bar with a jukebox. And, well, probably you see that in America everywhere, but yeah, not here in Portugal. So there is a jukebox, and it's a tapas and wine art cafe. That's the official name of the bar.
That is awesome.
So there's wine, there's tapas, and there's art.
Yeah, there is. That's so cool. I also, by the way, love that you work for IKEA. Super awesome. Just because, I mean, IKEA is Swedish, right?
Yes.
So it's like making all your connections. You went to Sweden, yeah, and it was in your heart forever. And you were like, yeah, I'm putting together. See, this is why you're awesome. You've taken everything that you've done and just used it. You didn't throw anything away. Yeah. You were just like, let me just throw this info in my backpack and I'm going to need it later. And then they were like, hey, we have this job at IKEA. And you were like, perfect. By the way, I'm exactly who you need. I love it.
Actually, it helped me to get into IKEA because I loved the gummy bears, or not the gummy bears, but some sweets they had in Sweden. So I kind of said in the interview, yeah, I really enjoyed Sweden, and especially those sweets that you have. That's what reminds me at home.
Nice. Yep. Exactly. Oh my God. That's so perfect. I love it. I was literally, so I teach improv workshops to all sorts of things, all sorts of people. And I taught it very recently at this comic book convention. I did an improv festival, and I called the workshop Learn How to Be Funny at Parties. And I essentially just talked to them about mining information and then using that information in conversation, right? So exactly what you did. It's like you find out that the person you're talking to is Swedish. You know a lot about Swedish candy, so you can connect with them by referencing this thing that you know, and then they immediately feel comfortable with you because we have this common ground. And that was like the essence of my whole workshop, was like you just talk to a person, find a way to find common ground, and as soon as you have something, it's a television show, it's your hometown, it's your favorite food, doesn't matter, boom, you're best friends. If you can find one thing to connect on, it's exactly what you need. The only thing you need.
How you get a job in a job interview? That's what do you need? To connect with the person.
Well, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, if you connect with them in a way that makes them trust you, that's all. I mean, that's how you get a job. At the end of the day, nobody knows if the person is handing you a resume that really shows that they have the ability to do the job. It's really just a matter of, you know, making people trust you. And the beautiful, best part about being an improviser is that you're working on that skill every minute. You're like, I will make everyone trust me. Everyone in this room can trust me. And when you're trustworthy, you're a better improviser. And then that just makes you a better human being.
Yep, that's totally true. That's what I believe in. I believe that you can, I think you can only be a good improviser on stage if you are a good improviser outside of the stage. And when I'm saying improvising, I'm not saying that we are lying or making up things. I think that you are truth to yourself. You share your knowledge, and you are generous to other people and to other people's idea, and you support everyone. I think that's the way you should be an outside improviser to be an inside improviser. Was it clear?
Good. Yeah, no, I'm just taking that in. Yeah, that's awesome. You know what? That's perfect. That is a perfect way to end this wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. That was such a gem.
Thank you.
I just want to, I'm like, that's solid. Yes. Listen to that, audience.
Thank you.
That's what you got to do. Thank you so much for talking to me and taking time out of your day.
Thank you. Now I'm good to bed now. Just to rest a little bit more.
I know. Poor kid. Take some medicine. Rest. Oh.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.